Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and tonight's guest are not necessarily those of this radio network, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Listener discretion is advised. Now lock your doors, open your minds, and prepare yourself to go
beyond the edge.
Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go flat.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Surgeon.
Go flat.
Ecom.
We're go flat.
GNC.
We're go.
Telmu.
Go.
Control.
Go flat.
Procedures.
Go.
Inco.
Go.
FAO.
We are go.
Network.
Go.
Recovery.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go flight.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It has now cleared the tower.
Lock your doors. Lock your doors. Lock your doors. Lock your doors. Open your minds. Beyond the Edge Radio is back. You're tuned into the best damn alternative talk on the planet. BTE Radio. Sunday nights and BTE Radio. Doesn't get any better than this. Welcome back to BTE Radio. Get ready, because the sh** is about to get real. Often replicated, never duplicated. We're the real deal, baby. BTE Radio. Mama warned you there'd be shows like this. Beyond the Edge Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio. If you're not listening, you're just stupid.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. It's Sunday night. It is January the 18th. And it is 8:03 here on the East Coast. Welcome to BTE Radio. We've got a great show in store for everybody this evening. Our guest tonight on the program, L.A. Marzulli, and he is an author, a lecturer, producer of the Watchers DVD series, and tonight we'll be talking about his brand new book about the Nephilim. He'll be joining us at the bottom of the hour at 8:30. And if you want to check out his bio information, you can drop by our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com, or check out LA's website, lamarzulli.net. Check those out during the show tonight to find out more about LA and some of the books he's written, the DVDs he's produced, and a little bit more about him while the show's on the air tonight. So welcome, everybody. Glad you're joining us this evening. We're going to have a great show tonight. Joining me from Unknown Origins Radio and just across the state line in New Jersey, my buddy Mark Johnson. Good evening, Mark. How you doing?
Hey, Eric. I'm doing pretty good. How are you tonight, man?
Doing okay, man. Doing okay. It's the weekend, of course, Sunday night wrapping up. You have to work tomorrow?
Unfortunately, yes. You know, back to the daily grind, Monday through Friday.
Yeah, Martin Luther King Day tomorrow, and there's a lot of people that have it off, and I don't want to rub it in, but I'm one of those people, so I get to stay up a little late tonight.
You suck.
I had just a little bit of rubbing it in, but I have a little bit of an extended weekend, so I'm happy about that, as you can tell in the tone of my voice.
For those of you who get the bank holidays, and the rest of us are out there slaving and grinding.
Yep, welcome to the real world. But Mark, I'm glad you're joining us tonight. I know this is a subject you're very familiar with, near and dear to your heart.
Oh, most definitely. This is it's become one of my new passion subjects. The whole idea of I look at it not so much as ancient aliens, but alternative history, forbidden history, things that we're not supposed to know, and they try to cover it up. So I'm really looking forward to talking with our guest tonight.
Yeah, L.A. is a fascinating guest. He's quite a character, and we'll have a fun show this evening for sure. But before we get to LA at the bottom of the hour, tell us a little bit about yourself, Mark, for people that don't know about Unknown Origins Radio. They have to be living under a rock. But you've been around for a while doing the show. You've been around doing paranormal research, and now you have some big projects in the works right now, publishing books and promoting authors and all that great stuff. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your interests and everything that you do.
Well, you know, not trying to like toot my own horn or toot. You know, it's almost embarrassing to to say all this stuff we've been involved with these last few years, but I'll make a quick run through it. Yeah, I've been a paranormal investigator for over 15 years. I run a group here in New Jersey called New Jersey Paranormal Research. And that's my longest endeavor, but I've also within the last year have worked with and become the co-director of Spirit Rescue International with Irene Allen Block. And Irene and I have a unique partnership in that we just bounce off each other with these great ideas, and things just spiraled from there. And we started our publishing company, Glanet Tye Publishing, and Irene had written a couple of books which I helped her to publish, and then we went from there and started getting other authors, and now we just published our latest book, Lost in Space and Time, by British author Sue King, who talks about her near-death experience and her channeling an entity named Jacob. A really fascinating read. And of course, I am the host with my co-host Bruce Pearson over on the Dark Matter Radio Network. I don't know if I can say that. It's technically competition. But Art Bell's network, who will be coming back in July. Art will be on Dark Matter. And we're on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. With Unknown Origins Radio. And, you know, very similar to Beyond the Edge in that we do talk about things, all things paranormal. I think really the only difference is I really try to – there's some fringe subjects that I like to get into. I think that even makes Bruce uncomfortable sometimes. But we try to have a lot of fun with it. But you know what? That's still – I tune in here on Para X to listen to Beyond the Edge Radio too and show you my support.
We appreciate that, and I do the same. I always catch your archives. I very rarely listen live to any shows because I'm so busy running around the house or getting home late from work. So I catch a lot of the podcasts, and I've been listening to your show for a number of years now, and I've been a guest on your show as well as you've been a guest on mine. So glad to have you with us tonight, and looking very much forward to a great show this evening, Mark.
Well, you know, speaking of that, we'll have to talk off air about getting you back on over on our show as well, so... We haven't had a good Bigfoot Sasquatch show in a while, so and you're definitely the man to talk to.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks, and I'll be happy to. Speaking of shows, this past week kicked off the season premiere of a lot of shows. A lot of shows returning to the airwaves for a brand new season. Ghost Adventures. Of course, we've got Expedition Unknown with Josh Gates that started 2 weeks ago. Monsters and Mysteries in America debuted last night for season 3. A lot of good stuff on the Destination America channel. I think they should just call it the Paranormal Channel, really.
It's very, you know, you'd think Destination America would be more like the Travel Channel, but now they're becoming all paranormal all the time. And, you know, I think in my personal opinion, from the few shows that I've seen, with the exception of David Roundtree's show, Ghost Stalkers, which was on earlier this year, I haven't really seen a lot on there that impresses me much.
Yeah, it's all become the same anymore, to be honest with you. It's all just it's the same routine. Although I do like Ghost Stalkers. That's a pretty good show.
That's a good show. I mean, I've had the opportunity to talk with David Roundtree about it. And, you know, everybody makes fun of Chad because he screams like a little girl all the time. And as David explained it, he's an empath too, so he's feeling the energies in the places, which he's not screaming or jumping at nothing. He's feeling something there at that time. But you got to give the guy credit. He hasn't run out yet.
Well, that's a good thing. I've been called an empath by many people as well, along with a lot of variety of other different things, but that's a different story in itself.
You know, if you don't at least have 5 good derogatory names, you're not trying hard enough.
Well, then I'm doing really well because I've got a lot of them. Oh, my goodness. Let's talk a little bit about the TV shows that have come out. Now, as I mentioned, This started a couple weeks back, Expedition Unknown with Josh Gates. They kicked off with the Amelia Earhart two-hour special edition, special season premiere. And last week was the Temple of Doom. They went down to Cambodia for that show. And I've got to tell you, Mark, I've been very, very impressed with the last two episodes that he's put out there. And if there are going to be any indication of what's to come this season, this is going to be one of my favorite shows of the year.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, I've always felt that Josh Gates and Destination Truth, when he was on the Sci-Fi Channel, was hamstringed because he was on the Sci-Fi Channel. I don't have a lot of kind things to say about the Sci-Fi Channel, too, because I've dealt with their producers on a few shows, and they don't treat us very well. So they now that he's actually where he belongs on the Travel Channel, because that was a travel show. Expedition Unknown is very much another version of Destination Truth. However, the production values are higher. He's able to explore many different types of myths and legends, not just ghosts or monsters. And I've really been impressed. I have to say, when I first started watching the first episode, I was a little leery because when they had him sitting at behind the desk talking to the camera, I didn't like that at all. I mean, it was so jarring compared to what we're used to seeing. But once you get him out in the field, the old Josh Gates come back, the wisecracking, the guy has a great comeback for everything. He can tell he has a lot of fun, but he's also extremely respectful. And the show is just top-notch. I can't wait to see all the different places they go to this season.
Yeah, they've got a really interesting program coming up this week. They're going to be heading to Russia to look for the missing amber panels, which were priceless pieces of artwork that were stolen by the Nazis during World War II. And he's going to be in St. Petersburg, Russia, and then he's going to head to Berlin and go snooping around some bunkers. So it looks like a great episode coming up this week.
It is. I mean, again, the only other thing is I hope they show a little bit more of his team. I think that's one of the things I really enjoyed about the old show is the participation of the team, and they all became characters. I mean, Josh can certainly hold a show on his own, and if they don't show more of the team, that's fine. Although I did see his old cameraman, Gabe, who worked on the old show as well, on some behind-the-scenes shots. So, yeah, either way, I think it's starting off great. It's a fantastic show, and I hope he has a very long run.
I'm sure he will. The show, from what I understand, has gotten great ratings so far and a lot of viewers. So keep tuned into it. It's on the Travel Channel on Thursday nights. I believe it's at 9 p.m. Eastern time for the start of that show. So check it out. Another show that has been on for, I think this is the third week running now, is Ghost Adventures, without Nick Groff, unfortunately. But two great episodes so far, I understand. I did see the Bellwitch Cave episode. That was a really cool show. I did not see the Sally House. I know you did, though, Mark.
Well, you know, I watched it, DVR'd it, because I got in late last night, watched it today. Ghost Adventures has always been what I call my guilty pleasure show. You know, I always told people, don't ever do what these guys do. Although, as I was mentioning to you earlier off air, they have mellowed their style and become a little more respectful than they did from in the early days when all they would do was taunting and provoking, and they kind of got their rear ends handed to them spiritually over that. But I have to admit, this season they're knocking it out of the park. First two episodes, they go to two of the most iconic American hauntings, being the Bellwitch Haunting, the Bellwitch Cave, which nobody has ever been in before, and the Sally House, which no major television show has been to before. Now, you and I have both met last year at Phenomenology. We met Tony and Deborah Pickman in person. Mm-hmm. I've had them on my radio show before. Wonderful, wonderful people, very genuine. And to hear their story, they wrote a book called The Sally House Haunting. And if you haven't read it, I recommend to go get it. It's one of the better true story haunted house books out there. And it becomes very apparent that what they were dealing with was not a little girl ghost, but demonic. Now, do you ever remember the sightings show back from the early 90s when they first featured the Sally House Haunting?
Tim White, sure. I love that show.
Yeah, that was a great show. You know, my co-host Bruce Pearson actually was a segment producer on that show for a few episodes as well. And, you know, I remember that haunting case has been burned in my memory for over 20 years as they, you know, were showing live him being scratched and the mm-hmm. different activity. And yet the sad part is when the television show left, they were still stuck with the haunting. Nobody really helped them. And it got worse and worse the whole time they were there. So if you read the book or ever hear Tony and Deborah speak on their occurrences, Tony mentioned some of it on the Ghost Adventure show last night, how he was starting to become possessed. And he at one point was contemplating killing his wife.
Wow.
And he openly admits this now. And it still breaks him up. He's very upset by it. But when the Ghost Adventures team, they went in respectful. They encountered incredible activity. And this is one of the things about the show that I have always personally enjoyed, because I can watch shows and I have an editing background in feature films. So I'm really good at picking out the BS. I'm good at picking out when something's been manipulated on the screen for dramatic effect, or if something has been outright faked. And I've never, ever seen that with the Ghost Adventure show. It's the only show that I feel in my opinion, just watching it, never not being there in person, being on it, I feel that it's legitimate. And the evidence that they show is legitimate. And they certainly got a lot last night.
Well, good. Good. I'm glad to hear that. And I'm going to have to check it out on demand when it comes on. But I've always liked the show. I think it's humorous, and I get a kick out of Zach running around flexing for the ladies and wearing the tight T-shirts to show off his biceps. And my favorite, though, I have to admit, was Nick. I did like Nick a lot. I thought he was a pretty good researcher on the program. He'll be missed. I know he's working producing some other things now and moving on to bigger and better things. So we'll miss him on the show, but Ghost Adventures on the Travel Channel on Saturday nights now at 9 p.m., so make sure you check that out. One of my guilty pleasures and something I'm going to have to brag about, because I was, I guess you could say, involved with getting locations and eyewitnesses and getting the production crew to where they needed to be. Plus, I'm very good friends with the cast of the show. Finding Bigfoot, my guilty pleasure, is coming to Pennsylvania, to Fayette County, which is one of my research areas. And they'll be coming, the show is actually going to air next week, the 25th of January at 10 p.m., right after our show on Animal Planet. Now, which is really cool is one of the locations that they go to the first night investigation is an area that I've been continually investigating with researchers such as Sean Dennis, Dave Dragazin, Jimmy Trick and his wife Dee Dee, Sean's girlfriend Tiffany, Amy Perry was out there with me one time. It's a farm in the very southern end of Fayette County. It's a really cool place, and they got some pretty interesting evidence on the show that you'll have to pay attention to. So what really is cool for me is not so much as getting them, you know, the people and the places, but to actually see Finding Bigfoot in my research area doing their thing and talking to witnesses of cases that I personally went out and investigated. So I'm really looking forward to that episode.
That's going to be a lot of fun to see that. I can't wait to see that as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. And who knows, you might just maybe catch a glimpse of me sitting in the audience at the town hall at the State Theater in Uniontown. If you do look for the girl with bright blue hair, that's my niece. She was sitting next to me, so you'll see her in the audience before you see me.
So, you mean you weren't the star of the show?
No, I didn't get filmed for the program, which is fine by me. I have a face for radio, so I didn't get filmed for the show, but I did get to hang out with Cliff, Bobo, Matt. We had dinner at the Stonehouse in Uniontown on Saturday after they were done filming. I got to work with the production crew, Sean Mantooth, and a lot of those folks that helped do a lot of the shooting for the setting up and everything like that. It was a great opportunity. I'm thrilled I got a chance to be part of it, and I can't wait for everybody to see how it turned out.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Can't wait to see it.
Yep, should be good. And then last but least, another one of my favorite vices, and I don't know necessarily how you feel about this show. I'm not going to even talk about Monsters and Mysteries. I wasn't too impressed with that. But Mountain Monsters comes back to the air on April the 4th on Destination America. Now, I got to tell you, Mark, and you probably heard me talk about this before, I had reservations about this show. I was kind of like, eh, this is stupid. They're being totally off the wall, and this isn't really what happens. But the more I watched it, the more I fell in love with the program. The guys are a trip to watch. They're so funny, watching them fall down in the mud and just doing their hillbilly thing out in the woods. It's a blast. I love the show, even though some of the creatures and some of the things they go looking for are probably non-existent. But it's a fun show. What do you think?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I haven't watched it. My TV viewing is so limited these days. I've been so busy, but that's one show I haven't watched. But based on your recommendation, I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah, I think it's worth you taking a look at it. I have a fun time watching it. I get a laugh out of it, especially the fire-breathing dragon in West Virginia. That was a good episode. And the Snallygaster, of course. And it goes on and on. But
Wait. A what?
A Snallygaster.
Oh, one of those.
Yes.
Okay.
Seen in Maryland. A flying weird-looking dragon-like cryptid.
Okay.
Yeah, and they were attacked by several of them. So,
cool. Well, then I'll have to watch that thing.
Now, I did get a chance to meet Trapper in person at a conference last May, Creature Weekend conference, and very cool guy, very down to earth. We had a couple shots of whiskey together, and I asked him point blank, as many people did, "Come on, tell me, be serious with me. Are these things really out there?" And he looked at me straight-faced and said, "Yes, they are truly out there. We go looking for these creatures." So there you go.
Interesting. well, you know, there was another new paranormal show that I think, it was probably the most short-lived paranormal show ever. And the fact that they just announced casting this week, and within 3 days, they pulled the plug on it.
I was all set to go, man. I was looking forward to it. I was going to try out.
Oh, my God. And you talk about having a face for radio, and you want to try out for it?
Well, you know.
Yeah, get my fat butt out there. Yeah, that'll break the camera. They were going to do naked ghost hunting.
That's all me, man.
Naked ghost hunting. Okay. You know, what pinheaded, dumb moron producer was high when he came up with that idea?
I like the idea.
Okay, yeah.
I'm kidding.
I'll go naked ghost hunting with the Swedish bikini team, but... You know, I mean, I'm sorry. Come on.
How about naked
cryptid
hunting?
It's like they're so desperate to come up with these new gimmicks.
Yeah.
That they come up with the most ridiculous things. I mean, and let's face it, how many different ways can you paranormal investigate? The other shows, like our tried and true favorites, you know, with Ghost Adventures, they're always trying new technology, and some of it works pretty effectively, and they're working with some of the top people in the field. So to try to do another paranormal show, what, you know, you got to be different, but I mean, I think that's a little too far different. In any case, I heard the last I heard is the outrage from the paranormal community was so loud that they quietly pulled the plug on the show. So thank God we'll never see it.
Well, I'd like to know where they're going to keep their tools.
I'm not even going to touch that.
Yeah, that would be an
hey,
interesting
George,
program.
Bring over the lube.
This K2 meter's cold.
Yeah, K2 meters from cold. Bring me the KY.
I'm
sorry, I went there. I apologize.
Yeah, you went there. You went there. Yeah, it met a lot of negative feedback from what I saw. Now, I know they've got Naked and Afraid on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, one of those two, and they've got Naked and Dating on VH1. So I figure, you know, why not try it, man?
Okay, yeah.
Scott Grimwald did it in Paranormal Paparazzi.
Yes, he did. And, you know, where's Paranormal Paparazzi?
That's true.
Yeah, no offense to Aaron Sagers.
Poor Aaron.
He's a great friend of ours. We love Aaron, but, yeah, that show lasted, I think, 2 episodes.
Yeah, maybe 5 or 6.
I think I stopped watching after 2.
Yeah, well, at any rate, that's one show we won't see anymore, Naked Ghost
Hunting. You know, one thing I didn't mention earlier when we're talking about TV shows and some of the things that we're working on, one of the things we're announcing, but we're keeping it a little bit coy at this moment because there's still things in production. We're still working on it, but we are currently in talks of producing our own television show. And but it's going to be a dramatic based on, you know, as I mentioned before, Irene is an author and she wrote a few books. One of them was a novel called The Psychic Spy. And we have been in contact with a television production company interested in making this and pitching it to the network. So we're pretty excited about this. We're in the script writing phase right now. And all I can say at this point is stay tuned. Maybe later this year you might actually see our names on up on the screen on some producer credits for a new dramatic television show.
I'll have to keep my eyes open, and when you do find out, let us know, and we'll make sure we announce it here on the air for you.
Oh, sure thing. We're pretty excited about it.
Yeah, sounds good. And there is a show coming out sometime this year. I don't know when, but and it may not make it to TV, but the show Boogeyman, which has appeared on Destination America, just a few episodes here and there, and they have a weird broadcast schedule. You find out about it on Cryptomundo. It's on like a Friday and then a Thursday and a Monday and different time slots, but they've aired like four or five episodes of it. And in June of this past year, I was filmed along with Stan Gordon for that show. And they came out and talked to us about the Thunderbirds, and we went out in the field with them with a couple of eyewitnesses. And it looked like it was going to turn out pretty well. The show looks pretty decent from what I've seen. The couple of episodes I've seen, like on the Bell Witch and the Mothman and Champ. So hopefully the Boogeyman edition of the Thunderbirds will be good. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. And when that comes out, I'll make sure everybody knows so they can see my face for radio.
No, you're not that bad. You're better than me, put it that way.
That's debatable. But there's been some great shows that have come out, and like I said, they're all available on Destination America, Travel Channel, History Channel, Discovery Channel. It seems like that's the big thing right now. So all these new seasons are kicking off, and if you're a paranormal TV fan, you know, you got to be in heaven right now because that's what you can pretty much catch every day of the week. So,
you do have to give credit where credit is due, and I grudgingly give credit to Ghost Hunters. It's been on the air for 10 years now, but it put the paranormal on the map and kept it there. We've had great shows in the past, everything from In Search Of and Sightings, and those shows took the subject seriously. But, you know, the public as a whole never really ate these shows up and get it into the mainstream until Ghost Hunters came along. And then they seem to open the door to all of these other different shows, and now the paranormal is very much no longer a taboo subject, and people are taking it more seriously.
Yeah. Well, it's fun to see these shows. Like you said, back in the 90s, we had Sightings and Unsolved Mysteries, and that was pretty much it. And of course, in the 70s, we had In Search Of and maybe a show here or there, but nothing like that's on TV right now, so... Enjoy it while you can, because it won't last very long. I'm sure it'll be off the air in a few years.
We'll see. I mean, nothing lasts forever. Everything changes. Even Ghost Hunters is wildly different from what it was when it first aired.
Very true.
Truth be told, I preferred the first couple of seasons compared to the later shows, but before it became so staged.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah, you know, they do the same thing every week. Yeah.
Pretty much. Well, let's talk a little bit about next week's guest. Next week's guest on the program is a former politician in southwestern Pennsylvania. He's the former Allegheny County Commissioner, and he is going to be joining us to tell us about a book that he's written called The Demon of Brownsville Road. And that's a suburb of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is very, very close to me, as a matter of fact, probably only about 30 miles. And Bob Cranmer is his name. And while living in the home and running the county government in Allegheny County, he dealt with some pretty nasty spirits in his home. And he's going to be joining us on the show next week to talk about those evil entities that lived in his house, and we'll hear his story. So really looking forward to talking to Bob, because this one's pretty well hits home for me.
I read the book, and I had a chance to talk to Bob. And yes, it's going to be a great show. His story is another one of those. It's up there with the Pickmans and Stephen LaChance's stories.
Yes,
his is up there with those. If not, probably one of the worst.
Excellent. Well, look forward to next week's show when Bob Cranmer joins us. And our guest co-host is the contest continues for a new co-host here at BTE Radio will be Marie Samuels. She did help out with the co-hosting duties during the Halloween show, did a great job, so she's going to be guest co-hosting next week, as Mark is doing tonight, doing a fantastic job. And also going to say props and thanks to Johnny Walker, who did last week's show with Chad Lewis and Pepe the Lake Monster of the Mississippi River. A lot of compliments on Johnny and Aldo Poe, who joined us as our first contestant in the co-host contest. He did a great job with us as we talked with Stephen, Tim Yancey, and Jason Gowan. Stephen LaChance joined us the very first week. So great guest co-host so far, and we've still got a lot more to come in the next few weeks. Looking forward to it. And tonight's guest, we're going to jump right into him here in a second, in his story, L.A. Marzulli. He is an author, lecturer, radio show host, host of the Watchers DVD series, and a researcher. And tonight we'll be talking with L.A. about his book, On the Trail of the Nephilim, Part 2, New Archaeological Research. And Mark, I know you're excited. I'm excited. And he's coming up here in just a minute.
Excellent. Can't wait to talk to him.
We're going to jump into our first break of the night and bring L.A. on. To find out more about L.A., go to his website, lamarzulli.net. Or you can go to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. I said at gmail.com. That's our email address. But beyondtheedgeradio.com, there's a bio on the front page there. Check it out. All that information on L.A. is he's coming up next here at BTE Radio. Stick around.
Where else would you spend your Sunday nights? Beyond the Edge Radio. We'll be right back.
Good evening. Welcome back to Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. Thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. We've got a great guest lined up this evening for you. This is his third appearance on the show, and we're excited to have this gentleman back. A wealth of knowledge. He is an author, a researcher. He is the host of the Watchers DVD series. He has appeared on Coast to Coast, just a ton of lectures around the country. Conferences, a wealth of knowledge when it comes to a variety of subjects on the paranormal. And tonight we'll be talking with our guest about his new book, On the Trail of the Nephilim, Part 2, New Archaeological Research. So let's welcome back to the show L.A. Marzulli. Good evening, L.A. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, guys. Really appreciate it.
And thanks for coming back. We're glad you're joining us again for your third visit here at BTE Radio. Got a brand new book out. You've been traveling around the country doing lectures, keeping yourself busy, as always.
Well, and that's what's I love doing it. Love going to a live crowd and showing the pictures and hearing the oohs and the ahs when they actually look at the pictures, you know, from that are in the field that I've taken, and just kind of presenting all the evidence and letting people make up their own minds.
I enjoy it too. I do some lecturing myself, and I personally feel it's better to be in front of a crowd where you can see their reactions.
And, I love it. Yeah,
yeah, and they're really enjoying the subject matter that you're talking about. So I'm right there with you. Now, last time we had you on, we were talking about some of the major earth changes that were going on and the things in history, a lot of the negativity going on around the world, and things were just chaotic and crazy, and they haven't really improved much.
Well, you know, when we take a look at the global picture, what is it? In Switzerland, the Swiss franc went up like 30% last week. Mm-hmm. Greece is stepping out of the EU. We're looking at bank runs there. The petrodollar is teetering. There's a clip I saw today. I forget. Actually, it was on Conan, and they showed how manipulative the entire Western media is in the United States, where every single anchor said exactly the same byline. They were reading from a teleprompter. They all had the same story, you know, and basically about the gas prices. Oh, don't get too comfortable here. The gas prices are going to go up, you know, and it's like, it's just, the whole thing is a shell game. It's manipulated. The gas crunch, or the price decline, I should say, all because Russia is deals in oil. It's the second, it's the world's second leader in oil exports. And Russia, actually the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, all trying to move the default currency from the petrodollar to something else, more than likely the Chinese yuan. That being said, that's what's really going on here, in my opinion, with Russia. All the sanctions and all this other nonsense and the jockeying for, it's always about oil. It's always about money. And isn't it amazing how just a few, you know, a few short years ago, oil was at $6 a gallon almost out here during the summer. Well, you know, pain at the pump, Bob, because there's just a shortage. Oh, really? You know, how come there's just, it's the whole thing is manipulated. And why Americans aren't absolutely outraged by this, why Americans don't realize what's really going on, is just, I'm dumbfounded. I sit here and just wonder. The whole thing is manipulated because they're trying to punish Russia. That's what's going on here. It's all about punishing Russia for trying to move the world currency from the petrodollar. So that's what's going on. Meanwhile, we've got ISIL rampaging through Iraq. Isn't it amazing? We go into that, and don't get me, if you really want to go down this rabbit hole, I'll go with you. I mean, you get me started down that whole thing, and we get to 9/11, Building 7, the whole conspiratology stuff. The bottom line is the world is just ripe for some great cataclysm, and I think we're rushing towards it. I mean, we're rushing towards World War III. Over a couple of days ago, Nasrallah, who is the head of Hezbollah. Now, Hezbollah has been keep propping up Bashar al-Assad. This is all part of the Iranian Shia crescent in the Middle East. So the Iran really controls what's going on in Lebanon. You could say it's sort of like a puppet government, or it's sort of their de facto army. One of the de facto army, the whole Shia crescent. The Saudis are terrified of this because they're Sunni Muslim. Mm-hmm. And what we see is Hezbollah just came out and just basically said, look, we've got over 150,000 rockets. Many of these can strike any place in Israel. It's going to be a war. Israel has no choice but to, at some point, cut the head off the snakes. And you've got Iran that is threatening Israel numerous times. You've got Hezbollah. You've got Hamas. All their charters talk about the destruction of Israel. Folks, World War III is going to be very quick, and it's going to happen in the Middle East. We will more than likely see some sort of a nuclear event. And I think that's going to trigger supernatural events, which ties into your show. And when we see, look, the entire planet is linked together via the internet. That's never happened in the history of the world. Think about it. What happens in Japan, let's say that big tsunami that happens when we get the 9.0 earthquake off Fukushima Prefecture in Japan, which, you know, that's a whole other kettle of fish you want to get into. The nuclear radiation coming out millions of gallons every day, pouring out from Fukushima into the Pacific Ocean. Don't eat the sushi, folks. But the bottom line is this. We saw the tidal wave live on television. Live. That's unprecedented. Yep. Because of a satellite network, the global satellite network that's everywhere. When war breaks out, it's just like shock and awe in Iraq. You know, we're all sitting back eating popcorn, and thousands of people are getting killed through shock and awe. Thank you very much. And, you know, once again, the whole Iraq thing, you know, weapons and mass distraction. I mean, okay, Saddam got sarin gas. I get that. And I get the whole idea of going into Afghanistan. And now we all look back at 9/11 and building, you know, the buildings falling at free fall speed and Building 7 falling at free fall speed. It wasn't hit by a plane. It's like, you know, excuse for war, anyone? Archduke Ferdinand, World War I. And I realize I'm down the conspiracy rabbit hole here. But, I mean, come on. Why do we all of a sudden go, we're going to go get, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. We're going to go get Saddam. I mean, what? And we're in there, and then we just pull out and leave the place a complete disaster, and now we've got ISIL. And many people believe, and some of the intelligence come across my desk believes, that ISIL was a creation of the Jordanians. Basically, they were trained in Jordan, trained by the CIA and Mossad, and then they become rogue, and now they're rampaging through Iraq. Thousands of people have been killed. Hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced. And we sit over here and wonder about, you know, who the heck's going to play in the Super Bowl. I mean, it just makes you want to shake your head. Then we look at the weird weather patterns, guys, you know, which by the way, are global. It's like record floods, record heat, record snowstorms, record ice, record this, record that. I mean, it's just beyond the pale, absolutely beyond the pale. And what we see in my opinion, is sort of a ramp up. If you were just to take one of these isolated, you know, items, you just go, well, you know, it's okay, we can deal with this. There's too much going on all at the same time. And it's not going away. Look at the unrest. Look at the social and the civil unrest in America right now. Look at the racial divide we have in America right now. It is unprecedented. I haven't seen anything like this since really before, during the King era, where there was this much racial tension. And it's like, you know, why are we doing this? What's really going on? You know, why the hate? And it's not going to go away. And it seems like it's only getting worse. Huh. And, you know, I mean, I could go on for the next half an hour. I mean, just pick your poison. Look at the increase of UFO sightings.
Yeah.
Which, again, are global. Mm-hmm. You know, look at the increase of the black-eyed kids who were seen to appear and then disappear. Look at the rise of bizarre supernatural events that we see around the globe. I mean, something's going on. You know, we're not in Kansas anymore. It's not business as usual, in my opinion.
I agree completely with you. Things are definitely off kilter, and they have been for some time. Mark, what do you think?
Well, I mean, you mentioned the strange events. One of the ones that comes instantly to mind is a year or two ago when those strange horn blasts were being recorded all over the world. And there was no explanation for them. They're the spirals in Norway and a couple of other locations that were recorded. Although, you know, some of them they think might have been fake, but you know, there were some that were legit, and they can't find an explanation for them. A lot of strange things going on. And you know, L.A., I really agree a lot with what you're saying, especially, you know, all this manipulation, not only of the markets, but where we're headed as a society. And I don't see how we're going to avoid any kind of conflict at this point. In fact, it seems like this is what they want. They're purposely putting this together for a reason.
And you know, look, I saw an incredible movie this afternoon, American Sniper. And the guy's a patriot, the guy's a hero. I get all that, okay? I do. I really do. I understand it. I get it. But what I take umbrage with, and I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for saying this, is that our blood and treasure are involved in wars like Afghanistan, which has dragged on for 14 years. And every year, actually 2014 was a record year for the opium harvest. Follow the money, follow the oil. It's these people. We are giving our blood and treasure, okay, to some of these wars, which are absolute malarkey, absolute nonsense. They are set up by a global elite. They are controlled. They are managed by the military-industrial complex. And the idea, and this is where it's duplicitous. There was one line in the movie, and the guy gets it. You know, we got to fight them there, or we're going to fight them here. Well, I got news for you, folks. They're already in here, and our government is letting them in. The southern border has never been completed. There is no quarantine from people coming in from countries that harbor terrorists, which you, if you really wanted, you know, George Bush stands up and goes, you know, we're going to fight them over there so they don't have to come in here. I mean, it's like, if we really want to do that, if we really wanted to do that, if he really meant what he said and says, and you know, and says what he means, right? If that's really true, then the first thing you would do is you would block anybody coming in here from Yemen, Saudi Arabia, immediately. You know, Syria, Iran, but we don't do that. We let them all over here. The southern border is still porous. So this is what bothers me. Why we send our blood and treasure and we make these patriotic movies like American Sniper. And this guy's a hero. This guy believed in it. That's why he went back for four tours of duty. And Clint Eastwood in the acting is incredible, and it's amazing, and I get that. But if the premise is flawed, if the premise is flawed from the beginning, if you buy the premise, then the rest of it's okay. If you don't buy the premise, and I don't buy the premise, then the rest of it just falls of its own weight.
Well, Ellie, if you think about it, you know, one of the big things that's a big difference between now and compared to the Vietnam War, where soldiers coming back from there, there were all the protests in the street, people spitting on soldiers, calling right. them baby killers, and there was a general dislike and hatred of American soldiers
right.
who were sent over there. Basically, you know, soldiers don't have a choice. They're sent over to fight where they're told to fight. And in the case of both Iraq and Afghanistan, these manufactured wars that, again, in my opinion, were total horse pucky. All the reasons going in were horse pucky. And yet the new brainwashing campaign is, oh, thank a soldier for your freedom. Oh, we love the soldiers. The soldiers are heroes. And I'm not putting down the soldiers. Those guys put their lives on the line. They're very well trained. I have nothing but respect for them. Who I don't have respect for are the damn politicians who sent them over there fighting for their corporate interests. These guys are over killing people. They're not protecting our freedom. You know, if they wanted to protect our freedom, guard the damn border. They don't do that.
They don't do that.
They send them halfway around the world to kill a bunch of people, and it stirs up even more crap. And now all the problems we're having over in Europe, in France, in England, and it's not helping. And they know it, but they don't care because it's all manufactured for their financial gain. What did President Eisenhower warn us when he was leaving office on his farewell speech? Beware the military-industrial complex. And what happened? They get rid of Kennedy, get Johnson in there, and right from that point forward, boom, military-industrial complex has run this country.
No, look, I completely agree. We have not had a real president since JFK, and that's he was taken out. Remember, and this has been documented over and over again. I've listened to his secret society speech countless times. I wouldn't say countless times, but I've listened to it, and it's just amazing how he talks about secret societies are abhorrent. The very word secret. I mean, he goes after. He was gonna investigate and probably get rid of the Federal Reserve, which has held us in a chokehold. And then, of course, Nixon takes us off the dollar or the gold standard, rather. He was going to splinter the CIA in 1,000 pieces. Look who headed the Warren Commission, Alan Dulles. Are you kidding me? This whole thing was a classic coup d'etat. They got rid of him, and he was our last president. And since then, look, already, just think about this. Vote for Jeb, and I've been joking about it. It's like already they're the Fox News channel is like, Jeb Bush, he's our boy. He can do it, so jump for joy. I mean, they're already running Jeb Bush up the flagpole. It's a show game. It's rigged. It's like it's all, you know, millions and millions of dollars, and all these guys are just going to get behind the same old Yahoo. It's like we need to clean house in Washington. We need to elect all new people. We need to clean house. We really do. Someone needs to audit the Federal Reserve. You know, if Rand Paul decides to run, and if he got close, I guarantee it. Another loan nut job. Just watch. Just like all the other ones. Just like they got rid of RFK. Just like they get rid of Martin Luther King Jr. I mean, that's what's going on, man. The country, and you know what they do? They give us bread and circus all the time. And now it's the Super Bowl.
In my opinion, and I've said this to friends of mine, anyone who votes for Republican or Democrat, you're just voting for continued failure and corruption. The only way that I feel that we're really going to have political change in this government and this country, and that may not even happen because they find a way to put a stop to it, is to get rid of these political parties, go totally independent, and get rid of the problems. These people are the problems for the last 60 years in this country.
I found a solution for all of it. my own private little island with nobody but me on it.
until they decide to on your island and they come and kick you off and they what's the eminent domain?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, the Native Americans really love that one.
Well, we're almost at the top of the hour, so we're going to switch gears here, and we're going to talk a little Nephilim tonight on the show, because it's pretty evident that the world's going to crap, so we might as well talk about something fun for a little bit. Ellie, you've got a new book out, and this is the second of this series, On the Trail of the Nephilim, Part 2. Before we jump into the book, tell me a little bit, because I'm not real familiar with the Nephilim subject. I know what they are and what they're supposed to be thought they are. But for the listeners that aren't familiar like myself, can you give us a synopsis of what the Nephilim are and what we might be dealing with?
Well, this is the key to ancient biblical prophecy, in my opinion. It also transfers into the UFO phenomena eventually. The Nephilim are the product or the progeny of the fallen angelic hosts of heaven and the women of earth. In the classic sense, that's what the Nephilim are. If you're an ancient astronaut theorist, like we see on the Ancient Alien show, you would say that these were extraterrestrials doing this. They visited here and they had sex with the women and created the Nephilim. The thing is, we're not that far apart in our definitions. In a classic sense, angelic beings, these entities are extraterrestrials because they certainly don't reside here. What people need to understand is they need to take their concept, and when I say angel, they need to take that and immediately trash it because they've been, let's say, churched, and they have this fuzzy concept. Most people, and I'm painting with a very broad brush here, but most people have an idea, well, these little, you know, cherub type things with wings, whatever, they fly around, blah, blah, blah. Nothing further than the truth. These are highly, highly intelligent, powerful entities that can manipulate time, space, matter, and energy in ways that we have not yet been able to figure out. They operate on a completely different physics than we do. And that's the first thing we got to understand. And so when I talk fallen angels coming down here and messing with the women, the progeny is the Nephilim. This is the real reason for Noah's flood. When you read the Genesis 6 account, we see that there's a flood. Guess what? You can scoff at that. You can laugh at that. But pretty much every culture on the planet has embedded in their cultural identity some sort of a flood legend. The Chumash Indians, where I am, out in California, guess what? They have a flood legend. So this is like a universal deal in the United States, in globally. There's a flood legend that just seems to echo through the centuries. Something happened cataclysmic on this planet. And the flood legends are very similar. There's a boat. There's a bunch of people that are saved. Everyone else gets drowned. When we look at the biblical narrative, it says basically that Noah and his wife and his sons' wives were secluded. They were picked. They built this ark. They got the animals and up they went. The rest of the story that we know. The reason for this is because the Nephilim were on the earth and also afterwards. Being on the trail of a Nephilim, because we believe that there were multiple incursions, or not just one incursion of these fallen entities from another dimension, the fallen angels from the heavenly realms, literally from another dimension, interdimensional beings coming into this dimension, procreating with the women, creating the hybrid being known as the Nephilim. We believe that this happened over and over and over again, and in fact continues into modernity, the current day. What's interesting is when Joshua and Caleb, when we go back into the biblical narrative, the biblical text, we find that the Joshua and Caleb go into what is known as the Promised Land, also known as the Levant, and they begin to kill and slaughter the inhabitants there. That's genocide. Aha, wait, unless there's something else going on. What they are destroying, and that mandate again comes from the God of Israel, the Most High God. The reason why they're doing it is because these are hybrid beings that were never supposed to exist. Some people also call them the soulless ones. The soulless ones. The Nephilim tribes are in the Promised Land. The Nephilim, the Raphaim, the Zanzumim, the Emims, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, they're all there. And guess what? Some of these tribes have different genetic characteristics. For instance, the long necks. They're not all giants. Some of them are. But some of them may have different genetic characteristics. Josephus, the first century historian, tells us that the Nephilim had countenances so different, so large, from any other human that they were terrible to the sight. They were fearful to the sight and terrible to the hearing. Having trouble talking tonight. Please forgive me. They're terrible to the sight. And they were huge. They were giants. They were unbelievable. Josephus, the first century Jewish historian, writes about this. So we've got extra biblical texts which talk about this kind of stuff. It is unbelievable.
You know, one of the things that I've always been interested in is the fact that a lot of what's mentioned, especially in Genesis and the Old Testament, a lot of those stories are predated in the Bible. They're predated by older Sumerian texts, which mention the creation of mankind. They mention the flood. And although he's called by a different name, Noah is asked to build the ark, gather animals two by two, a lot of similarities in the stories. The one thing, when you mentioned giants, and I know that's a popular theory that people talk about, you know, oh, there were giants living in those days. And yet I wanted to get your opinion on that, because they talk about giants in two different ways. In the Bible, they talk about the Nephilim being were giants. The giants of old, no, the heroes of old, men of renown.
Right.
Would that term giants, is it translated correctly? Are we trying to be too literal, or are we actually talking about like giants in terms of these were men who did great deeds and they were the superheroes of the time, but still being mortal men? What's
Yeah, my take is that they're definitely not mortal men, because when we actually go into the text, and I'm looking at a Bible that leans towards the original Hebrew, the sons of the Elohim, the sons of God, saw the daughters of men that they were fair, and they took women of all they chose. My spirit shall not always strive with men, for he's also flesh. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also afterwards. Basically, you don't get the Nephilim, these hybrid beings. Who were the sons of God? And it says right here that they were the sons of Elohim. That's what the Hebrew says, the sons of Elohim. These are not flesh and blood. This is something else. This is an incursion of two different species, if I can use that word. These are the hosts of heaven, which are coming down. The pseudepigraphical book, which is a big fancy word, I suppose, to some people, but means that it was attributed to the book, to Enoch, but really written by someone else. The book of Enoch, which is quoted 70 times in the Tanakh, found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And it's interesting that more and more people now are reading it and wondering why it was excluded from the canon. And that's a discussion that people can argue about and get all hot under the collar. The bottom line is we can at least appreciate the book of Enoch's historicity. Woo! Historicity. I'm probably talking too fast. If I just take a deep breath and calm down, I'll do better. But we can probably take a look at the book of Enoch and appreciate its historicity. In other words, we can look at it and go, what is Enoch telling us that sort of amplifies the Genesis 6 account? What we see is that sons of God, Enoch just tells us right out, the angels of heaven, that's what he says. The angels of heaven came down, and 200 of them came down on Mount Hermon, which exists today. Actually, it's between the border of Syria, Israel, and Jordan. It's like right in there. Lebanon, I'm sorry. Syria, Lebanon, and Israel. It's like right there. It's no man's land even today. It's also a what would be considered a sacred site. It's a internationally protected site. It talks about the 200 watcher angels coming down in the days of Jared, and that's where all the mischief starts, right then and there. And that's thousands and thousands of years ago. So the book of Enoch tells us specifically that whatever the progeny, it's not human. The Nephilim were not human. And one of the attributes of a Nephilim, one of the genetic characteristics, was giantism, at least in the first incursion. Later on, they're not as big as they were in the days of Noah. We see that between 9 and 12 feet, that's what we get later on in the biblical narrative. Og, this character who appears later in the biblical narrative, I would estimate maybe 14 feet, roughly, between 13 and 14 feet. Goliath, between 9 and 12 feet, somewhere in there. What I discovered, and I've got photographs of this in my book, On the Trail of the Nephilim, out on Catalina Island. I was just on the History Channel's In Search of the Lost Giants, where the Vieira brothers interviewed me about this. It's my intellectual property. I discovered the photograph in the museum, and I showed it to Jim, and that's why they put me on the show. We analyzed that photograph with a triple-blind study, three different people with different computer programs, looked at the photograph, and all with their programs, basically put the giant at around 9 feet.
Could you describe what the photo showed for our listeners, for those who haven't seen the photo? Was it showing a skeleton, or what was it showing?
What it shows, the photograph came from 1919 from Ralph Glidden, who was a conducted primitive archaeology, archaeological digs in the Catalina Islands. The Catalina Island is part of the Channel Island chain, which runs from Santa Barbara down to San Diego. Catalina is a very large island, and he was out there and being employed by the High Museum. The High Museum was later gobbled up by the Smithsonian Institute. And he's out there, and the picture that I found, which to me was absolute pay dirt, and it's somewhat viral. It was on the History Channel, and it's all over the internet now. I've posted it on my on my sites, and it's on my website, and of course it's featured in the new book. But it shows Ralph Glidden standing in a recently excavated grave, and in front of him, in situ, it's not a bone pile, in situ is a very large skeleton. When we take Ralph Glidden's known height of 5'8", we begin, and we take that skeleton, and remember, triple blind study, had three different people with three different computer programs look at this. They all put the giant around 9 feet. We rounded it down to 8'6". We were being really conservative, not trying to be, you know, sensationalistic in any way. I rounded it down to 8'6". But that's a 9-footer out there. And what that does, in my opinion, is it validates the Native American oral tradition of giants, which many different tribes all through the United States have, number one. Number two, it validates or begins to vet and point back to the biblical narrative as not being something spurious or exaggerated, but actually being true. And we found two skeletons out there, which we believe are around 9 feet in height. One of them had 6 fingers, and that is all in the book. We show that. And what's interesting about the 6 fingers, again, that traces back to the biblical narrative of 6-finger giants. So, look, is it a smoking gun? Yeah, on some level it is. Is it conclusive? No. And already the naysayers are all over this thing, trying to, you know, tell people that, oh, Ralph Glidden staged the photograph. Okay, so let's examine that ridiculous remark, because it's a straw man argument. They're just making this up. No one knows whether Glidden staged the photograph. But here's how you debate with that. If Glidden staged the photograph, why then didn't he use it? Why then didn't he use it anywhere in his, this was in 1919 when he was employed by the High. He died decades later. He never used the photograph or said, look at the photographic evidence I have of 9-footers. Never did that. Never did it. There's only one byline in his journals, which were very sparse and very incomplete, where he talks about found a very large skeleton over 8 feet. So that's all it is. If he's trying to create something sensationalistic, why doesn't he then use it? He doesn't use it. And so the argument is a straw man argument. Whereas, where did he get the means and the know-how to create a 9-footer? How would he have done that in 1919? And why would he jeopardize his job with the High Museum by creating a ruse? And if he did go through all the trouble to create the ruse, why then didn't he use it? And the answer to that, all of that just falls of its own weight. And that's all they have to go on. Because the naysayers tell you that the photograph was faked, then we're supposed to believe them. Meanwhile, the people that I've had look at it, and there was actually 4 people originally that looked at it, all of them stated that the photograph was genuine and not photoshopped in any way. And I took a photograph of the photograph with my camera at the museum, and it's real. And guess what? No one else talked about these photographs till L.A. Marzulli found them. No one else said a word about it. No one saw the 6-fingered skeleton. No one saw, this is the one that's in the book, which no one has addressed yet at all. It shows an elongated skull of an adult. I believe it's a female, but I could be wrong. Very elongated. And at the feet of the skeleton in situ, in the grave, is a child. And the child has a very large, elongated skull. And where do we find this? We find it in Peru all day long. And Catalina Island is thousands of miles away from Peru. And yet we see the same type of cranial deformation in the skeletons off Catalina as we do in Peru. Wouldn't it be great if we could actually examine the skeletons? Guess what? They're not there. And no one knows what happened to them. Isn't that convenient?
Well, even the Egyptians had, at least with the pharaoh Akhenaten and his sister, I think was a Nefertiti, who both had the elongated skulls as
yes.
well. Now,
yes.
I'm not sure if I don't remember offhand if the Egyptians ever practiced with the tying the boards and purposely making skulls elongated. I know that was big in Peru,
yes.
but they had the elongated skulls, and he had very, very strange features to begin with the high cheekbones, long jaw, very thin face, and the elongated skull. And all the depictions of them, of the whole family, even the kids, even with, you know, Tutankhamun, who was his son, all seemed to be depicted in very different ways compared to all other Egyptian rulers that preceded them. Very almost etheric in terms of like how elongated all their features were. Now, was there any other culture besides in Peru that also practiced the elongated skulls with the pressing the boards?
Well, this is a raging debate, and it's still raging even today. What's interesting about this is we see elongated skulls all over the planet. We see them throughout Europe, into Russia, into China. The Rapa Nui may have elongated skulls. They show up pretty much globally. Again, we found them out in Catalina Island. So what the heck are they doing here? Something is going on. The history that we've all been taught in school has huge gaping holes in it. The powers that be don't want this information out. In my opinion, the reason for it is because it points back to the supernatural. And if it points back to the supernatural, it begins to validate the biblical narrative. And if the biblical narrative is true, then maybe all the prophecies in the biblical narrative are true. And that's what's at stake here. Because Darwinism, and you guys know this, Darwinism is the prevailing paradigm on a global level. That's it. In the scientific community and in academia, Darwinism is what is embraced. If you're a biologist, you embrace Darwinism, or good luck trying to find a job. Ben Stein's movie Expelled demonstrates this without any question. You watch Ben Stein's movie Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, and decide for yourself. There is what I would call intellectual fascism when it comes to this information.
Well, I mean, even look at in the archaeological record. See, you're not the only one having trouble talking about you know, I've had conversations with the late Philip Coppens. And, you sure. know, one of the things that he always talked about is when you look at some of these other sites, like at Pumapunka or Göbekli Tepe, and these sites are being dated back to 10,000 years ago, and the modern historians and archaeologists will only admit that the earliest civilization was the Sumerians, which was about 8,000 years ago. So we already have proof of these civilizations, of these buildings, these structures that are much older, and yet they're still not acknowledged by modern day science, because, you know, then they have to come out and say, oops, you know, we were wrong. And God forbid that should ever happen. So many different scientists and people who come up with alternate theories, they get run out on a rail and their careers are ruined.
That's right.
So many times that they are forced to openly speak and support the party line just to keep their jobs. And if you go against that, forget it. You know, you're a laughing stock and they destroy you. How is that scientific advancement?
Well, it's not. And I actually wrote about this in Amitrail Volume 1. The whole thing, the whole scandal that came across with the so-called climate scientists telling us, well, let's just destroy the data because it's not going where we want to go. We'll just make up our own. Oh, the Earth is getting warmer. Global warming. They fudged all the numbers. They just created their own numbers because they didn't like where they were going. But there's a – and I show this lithograph in 1842, okay, from 1842 in the book. And it's absolutely astounding. And it shows – a fetus that was taken from a pregnant woman who died and was mummified. And when the archaeologists went in, they realized she was pregnant. And even then, this debate was raging about cradle headboarding. So they decided, let's see what the fetus looks like. So they went in. The fetus had an elongated skull. And there's a lithograph from 1842. And this is the quote which I reproduced in the book. And I'll read it to you now. We ourselves have observed the same fact in many mummies of children of tender age, who, although they had cloths about them, were yet without any vestige or appearance of pressure of the cranium. More still, the same formation of the head presents itself in children yet unborn. And of this truth, we have had convincing proof in the sight of a fetus enclosed in the womb of a mummy of a pregnant woman, which we found in a cave 2 leagues from Tarma, in which is, at this moment, in our collection. That's groundbreaking stuff. Thank you, Brian Forrester, for alerting me that this journal existed. And I reproduced the lithograph in my book. And it's astounding because even in 1842, there were academics who were insisting, no, 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 all this is cradle headboarded. Because what's going on here is, and this is where it gets into woo-woo land, what it points to is an unseen source manipulating the human genome. And now we move into modernity with the so-called alien abduction phenomena and people who are abducted, sperm is taken, ovum is taken. We've got hardcore physical evidence, which we show in Watchers 7 and Watchers 8. We've got evidence that I'm working on right now, which I can't divulge, but I will later on once we find out what it is. And if it seems to vet what our hypothesis is, we will go, you know, public with it at some point. But the bottom line is there seems to be a breeding program. And guess what? In my opinion, this validates a 2,000-year-old prophecy that was uttered by Yeshua. Many people know him by Jesus, who basically says, when I return, it'll be like the days of Noah. I'm paraphrasing. When I come back, and I'm going to come back at some point, be like the days of Noah. Remember, at this point in time, no one knows who he is. There's no church. There's no cathedrals. There's no anything. There's just, he's got a couple of followers, and they're just running around the countryside. But wherever he goes, he brings goodness. People are healed and delivered. He brings literally the kingdom of heaven wherever he travels. It's amazing. And now 2,000 years later, we have this written down in our Bibles, and we open this up, and we go, what do you mean it'll be like the days of Noah? Which means we've got to go back and look at the days of Noah. And what do we see there? We see that the days of Noah are unprecedented. There are no other days like them on the face of the earth. It's when the fallen angels openly had sex with the women. They were here. They revealed themselves. The Nephilim walked the earth. And all I'm saying is that my hypothesis, and other people believe this too, Chuck Missler for one, and there are others, the Nephilim are back. There's a breeding program. And these are not extraterrestrials from Zeta Reticuli. They are, in fact, interdimensional beings. And Jacques Vallée vets that for us when he says that the whole phenomena is more akin to interdimensional than it is extraterrestrial. And with scientists now trying to tell us that we're in some sort of a giant hologram, then the interdimensional hypothesis takes on even greater weight, in my opinion.
Well, you know, that's actually something that I've really been leaning towards lately in a lot of my studies with not only with ufology, even a lot of the paranormal. I mean, I come from a paranormal research background.
Sure.
And most of what we consider to be ghosts and spirits, there's a lot of evidence that's suggesting that at least some of it may be more related to interdimensional beings or interdimensional interaction than it is with a typical ghost or spirit or what we traditionally think of as those things. Everything from, you know, if you look at string theory and you'd listen to Dr. Michio Kaku talk about it, Neil deGrasse Tyson talk about it, you know, they talk about that there are in that theory that there could be multiple dimensions, multiple layers, all occupying the same space, and the fact that time as we understand it is an illusion. All time is supposedly happening at once, and it's only our perception of time that makes it linear. So, you know, if you look at in some paranormal cases when people think they see, you know, a woman in Victorian dress walking down the stairs, they go, oh, I just saw a ghost. Did they see a ghost, or did they maybe see a momentary overlap of that space-time continuum since it's all happening at the same time? What if they just saw a real-life flesh-and-blood person walking down the stairs?
I agree with you. It's a very complex situation. And then you get the places where some sort of a horrific murder has taken place and there's blood on the ground, and that blood acts as a portal for these interdimensional entities to come through.
So one of my favorite books that talks about a extreme high strangeness paranormal case is Hunt for the Skinwalker by George Knapp and Colm Kelleher. And within the experiences they had there, they were seeing UFO craft on that ranch in Utah. But the thing that fascinated me the most was they witnessed on several occasions these portals opening in the sky.
Yep.
And these portals opening up, and it could be dusk or almost nighttime, and yet in through the portal they saw bright daylight and blue sky and these craft flying through. Now, are these craft flying through a wormhole from across the galaxy, from one planet to another? Or are they just, and this seems more believable to me, what if they've just created that portal is just that opening in the veil between dimensions, and they're literally just, you know, coming from their dimension right into ours? And then, of course, then they go zipping off through the sky. And this was seen several times, including one night when researchers had night vision camera and they were scanning this area and they witnessed through the infrared night vision camera a portal open and a Bigfoot-like creature, what it looked like, a humanoid, crawl through the opening, jump out, and then run into the forest. So who's to say that a lot of this isn't a case of interdimensional interactions with creatures and beings that are just, an arm's length away. We just can't reach them.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it?
Well, it really is. There's a place in Peru, Amorumoru, it's called. And I think I didn't pronounce that right. But the bottom line is I've been there, and I spoke to one of the docents there who gave me a very chilling story. And this talks right at the whole idea of portals and openings. It's this huge rock face very near Lake Titicaca. It's not that far off the beaten track, but it's not really visited by a whole lot of people, let's put it that way. And it looks like a doorway. When we got there, the shamans had been doing ceremonies and candles and rituals there. They do it pretty much every night. And this man told me that a friend of his went in with a shaman, and they opened up the doorway, and they went in. And when the man came back, he went completely mad, and he's been in an insane asylum, an institution, for years now, not in his right mind, because what he saw completely terrified him. And we hear stories like this. You mentioned those, and I won't say the word, those who dress with animal skins and walk, okay? You know what I'm talking about, but I'm not going to say it. And I've been told by Native American elders not to say it because it attracts them. And I'm not being superstitious. I'm just being respectful. And I've spoken to one pastor in particular on the Navajo reservation who, when he was 16, he and his friends were walking in the reservation, and they heard this howl coming from across a hill, and they scrambled up to the top of the hill, and there they saw what looked like a wolf man. It was walking on two legs, but had the head of a wolf, but the arms of a man, but it was a wolf, and they were freaked, needless to say. But I've actually seen video, and I've seen this with my own two eyes, a video which has never been released before, by a game warden on that same reservation. And in it, what we see is a parked pickup truck, and there are dogs barking to the right of the pickup truck. From the left side of the frame, away from the pickup truck, we see an enormous wolf come in, bound in to the frame next to the pickup truck, leap over the pickup truck, hit the ground, and then go flying up in the air and disappear. Now, I've seen that. That's from a game trail. There's no Photoshop involved. I've seen the original footage. That was at a Navajo Indian reservation.
Wow.
You know, that's very similar to what was mentioned in George Knapp's book about with the rancher family, where this giant wolf that was so huge, it almost that came in and seemed friendly at first until it attacked one of their calves, and they shot at it, they chased it, and it just vanished. And, you know, there were wolves thousands of years ago, tens of thousands of years ago. They called it the dire wolf, which was in North America. And, you know, it makes you wonder, you know, could that wolf that's being shown or the ones that these people are witnessing, that same type of creature that existed thousands of years ago? Here's something else to think about, too. You know, you hear the stories of the wolf man or these, you know, I'm not going to say the word, of Native American lore. And it's something that's known as a bi-nature creature that has the features of man and animal intermixed. And, you know, that's something that's been a part of human history. As far all cultures have these paintings and stories, from the Egyptians, the Sumerians, everybody has these creatures with animal heads and human bodies. And we just look at that, okay, that's just their religion. Okay, that's just, you know, somebody's fanciful. They come up with stuff. Oh, yes, Osiris and Ra and all that. Yeah, Set, I mean, you know, they all have these animal heads and human bodies. The bull sphinx of the Sumerians, human head and an animal body. And we just think, okay, that's fine. Somebody made that up. They're being creative. And yet, what are some of these strange creatures that people talk about in lore? Is these human-like and these mergings of human and animal bodies. What if, and this is sound like I've been out smoking something, but what if it's really what these people are drawing or showing is actually more or less accurate? What if there is some kind of strange creatures or strange interdimensional creatures that do have these features that blend humanoid and animal pieces together? And if you're dealing with something from another dimension, who says that the physics and biology has to follow what we follow here, especially if something is coming in from somewhere else temporarily? They could have a whole different set of physics and biology happening over there that would be impossible to happen here. At least it's food for thought.
Well, again, going back to the Book of Enoch, which is really interesting to me, what we see with the Book of Enoch is that there are chimeras. There are chimeras, animal-human hybrids, and they're walking the earth. And the Book of Enoch tells us. And, you know, frankly, it happened in antiquity in the days of Noah, and I believe it's happening now. I think that look what we hear about the Dulce underground base. I think it's, you know, very much real. I think the geneticists are already playing with stuff like this. And, you know, who knows how far it really gets. You get what I'm going with this?
Oh, yes, most definitely. I mean, it's – there are things – we – and I know we're coming up on our break here, so I'll just make this brief. We are comfortable with what we think we know. And I think that's part of the problem with science and humanity in general is nobody wants to think out of the box. Nobody wants to consider – the what ifs. We just keep doing what we're supposed to do, be good little consumers, you know, do what we're told, and don't look at that man behind the curtain. And for me, I'm always been much more interested. I want to rip that curtain back. I want to see what the hell's back there. I want to know what's really going on. And in my search, I'm finding that things are a hell of a lot stranger and more weird and bizarre than we could possibly imagine.
I couldn't agree with you more. Couldn't agree with you more.
Well, gentlemen, we've come to the bottom of the hour. It's 9:30, and L.A., I know you could only stay with us tonight for an hour. So we want to thank you very much for dropping by and sharing a little bit about your new book and the theory and the hypothesis of the Nephilim. Fascinating subject. I sat here and listened to all of it and took it all in. So very interesting stuff, and it does blow your mind, that's for sure. Anything new in the future coming up for you, L.A., projects, books, anything you can talk about with us real quick?
Well, briefly, we're going probably going back to Peru. There's sites in America that we're examining and looking at. I'm working on several books right now. On the Trail Volume 3 will probably come out, not this year, probably in 2016. But there's going to be a book, which I won't tell you the name of yet, which I'm going to sandwich in between them, which I... some of what we actually talked about tonight, but it has to do with the supernatural. It's a supernatural paradigm book. I think you'll find that interesting when it comes out. But look, guys, we barely scratched the surface I'd love to come back on and talk about some of the megalithic sites that are that we show in On the Trail 2 and some of the other startling evidence that we have, like the Raman spectroscopy evidence that's in On the Trail 2. Folks, if you're interested, go to my website, lamarzulli.net. Lots of pictures there. Check it out for yourself.
Well, thank you, Ellie, and we definitely will have you back on the show to continue this conversation because I think this is one rabbit hole that we start down. It's a long, long way down to go.
Yeah, it's a long way down, and we barely scratched the surface, but it was fun tonight, guys, and you guys were great hosts. Thank you, Mark and Eric, and hope to be on the show soon.
Thank you, Ellie.
It was great talking to you.
Have a great night.
Guys, take care.
Good night. Bye-bye. LAMarzulli.net is the website to check out. Our guest, L.A. Marzulli, here on the program. Fascinating, Mark. Very fascinating. And you really know your stuff, buddy. I got to give you hats off to that.
I told you, this is right up my alley. This is the stuff that fascinates me. And, you know, the weirder, the better.
Definitely. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you and I will shoot the proverbial stuff for the last half hour of the show and continue the conversation. Folks, you're listening to BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the ParaX Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. Mark Johnson, our special guest co-host tonight. Our guest for the first hour, I should say, was L.A. Marzulli. LAMarzulli.net is his website. You can check that out. And keep it right here, folks. We're going to continue the conversation after the break. Don't go anywhere.
BTE Radio. We'll be right back after these messages. You can stop holding it now. This ain't your great-granddaddy's talk radio show. This is Beyond the Edge Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio.
Welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, as we like to call it. We're live here on the ParaX Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. Mark Johnson, my guest co-host tonight on the program. What a fantastic job there, Mark. I got to take my hat off to you, buddy. You really know your Nephilim.
Thanks. Like I said, this is something that has really piqued my interest in the last couple of years, and I've really been doing a lot of research. You know, after I had mentioned I had previously talked with Philip Coppens before he passed, and a lot of, you know, I watched the Ancient Aliens television show, and, you know, while I look at that show and cringe a lot of the times, you know, ever since Chariots of the Gods and Eric von Däniken's book, I've always been fascinated, not so much in the idea of ancient aliens per se, but more of this alternative history or forbidden history. So this is definitely a subject that I'm fascinated with.
It's an interesting subject. I don't know very much about it. I've never really looked into it. But, man, L.A. Marzulli, our guest tonight, really knows about it. Written several books on the subject, and whew, he can really get into it.
Yeah, he's a talker.
Yeah, good guess.
You know, he brought up a couple things, and I'll mention some of the things that I've always been fascinated with. When he talks about, if you look at in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, and I had previously mentioned that how a lot of those stories in Genesis were – they seem to have their roots in earlier writings from the Sumerians, which mentioned very similar subjects. And it's almost like the later authors borrowed from those myths to develop in what became into the writings that would become in Genesis in the Bible. And he mentioned earlier, I didn't get a chance to ask Ellie this question. He mentioned the Elohim. Okay. Elohim is the Hebrew word that was used for God in the Bible. It's mentioned a few hundred times in the Old Testament, especially. Elohim has been translated over the years to be Jehovah, as we know. But the original, here's what's really interesting about that. The original term of Elohim in Hebrew has both singular and plural characteristics, depending on how the word is used and said. So think about this for a moment. They talk about how Elohim created, or God created, the heavens and earth and whatnot. Well, was it one God or was it a group of beings? Think about that for number one. Number two, later after the fall of mankind, they show Elohim, singular, I guess, is walking in the garden that day, and he's looking for Adam and Eve, and he can't find them because they were bad little boys and girls, and they ate the apple, and now they're hiding because they're ashamed, because they're naked. And so God calls them out, and when he finds out what they've done, what does he say in the Bible? If you go back and read in Genesis, he talks about that now mankind has become like us, plural. Okay, and what are we going to do about it? And he refers to himself in what people think of as the royal we, you know, and referring to himself in the third person. But again, it's ignoring the fact in English translation, that's what we think. But in Hebrew, Elohim has plural characteristics. So what if God is not talking to himself, but he's talking to other creatures like him, the Elohim, instead of one Elohim? So you're dealing with the possibility of multiple interdimensional beings. And when they use the term Elohim, of course, because you're talking multiple, something else to really think about is in later versions of the later stories of the Bible, later chapters of the Bible, we're dealing with God, okay? And that God in the earlier New Testaments, if you really take a look at it, and I'm not trying to bash anybody's religion here, I'm not trying to get anyone upset, just throwing out some hypothesis here, is he was a jerk, okay? Not only sending out, you know, Moses and the Israelites to go and kill and murder and conquer and take all these lands because, hey, that's the chosen land. It kind of sounds suspiciously like eminent domain to me. But even with Adam and Eve, tell me how fair this is. Okay, you create mankind in your image. Now, you could take it that literally or figuratively. Maybe it's a little bit of both. And then you put them in this garden, and then you tell them, okay, you can eat from every tree in this garden except that one. You're not allowed to eat from that one. And why is that? Well, because then, you know, that's the knowledge – tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Well, it's also the tree of if you ate of it, you become like God. And he doesn't want that. He wants to keep us down here like, you know, like the animals and whatnot. He doesn't want us to be on equal footing. And again, so if you start looking at those stories less from a religious point of view and more from a, you know, a historical point of view, even though there's a lot of mythology in there and a lot of symbolism, but still, there's a kernel of truth in there that I think that you're dealing with beings who created the human race and then tried to keep them down. And then mankind became elevated and they didn't like that. And we got kicked out of the Garden of Eden. Now, here's something else, too. Think of the serpent, okay? Everybody automatically assumes, oh, well, you know, if you talk to most Christians today, they automatically tell you, well, the serpent was Satan, and he was trying to tempt Adam and Eve to go against God's will, okay? Or, first of all, the Bible never calls him Satan. It's just the serpent, okay? And what do we think of as a serpent? Well, we think snake, okay? Well, why is it never said snake in the Bible? Why is it serpent? It's kind of an arcane way of saying it. And, you know, there are, if it's a reptilian, and the serpent at that time had arms and legs before God cursed him. So you're dealing with an intelligent being, not an animal, who can talk to Adam and Eve. Because the animals sure didn't talk. The serpent did. And it's curious that one of the alien races that they always, UFOs, alien abductees and experiencers talk about is the reptilians.
Reptilians, yep.
Okay, you're starting to put two and two together here. Now, what does the serpent tell Eve in the garden? She goes, well, we can't eat of this tree. And the serpent says, well, yeah, because God knows if you eat of this, you're going to become like him. You're going to have the same reasoning power and the same wisdom as him. And he doesn't want that. So if you eat this, you know, you're going to be like God. In other words, it's going to elevate humanity onto the same intelligence level as the creators who made them, which was a big no-no. Now, there are other similar stories out there where the gods or even some of the other gods took pity on mankind and taught them things. In the Greek mythology, you had Prometheus. Prometheus came down and gave mankind fire and taught mankind everything about, you know, agriculture and textiles and all this knowledge he imparted on him. And the gods got pissed and cursed him. And they latched him to a rock, chained him to a rock where a vulture eats his guts every day. But that's very similar to what happened to the serpent in the Garden of Eden. He was punished by God, and they ripped his arm and legs off and said, "You crawl on your belly." Okay, but it's instead of it being looked at as an evil entity trying to mislead us, I always look at that serpent character being like Prometheus, as in taking pity on mankind and offering them the knowledge that is forbidden to us because these creator beings wanted to keep us low. So that's kind of interesting. You also have in the Book of Enoch, which L.A. was talking about earlier, he calls them angels, and I actually disagree with that. I've read the Book of Enoch, and I've read some other interpretations, and it's never really said angels, but they are the watchers. Okay, well, who are these watchers? Well, they're tasked to watch over the earth. Okay, why? If God's all powerful, why does he need these other beings to watch over the earth? But if you look at it in terms of not supernatural, you know, spiritual beings like angels and gods, but let's say maybe we are dealing with another intelligent race, either extraterrestrial or interdimensional, that are doing experiments or doing things with mankind or the planet in general, and you have the observers. I mean, you go to wildlife experts who go and they get the duck blinds and they get behind it and they observe what's going on with the animals. They take their notes or they study. That's what these watchers more seemed like to me. And then in the book, it talks about how, you know, some of them thought that the women were looking, hey, the earth chicks are looking pretty hot. Why don't we go down there and they say take wives of them? You know, we know what that euphemism is. They're out to get some.
They're better looking than reptoids.
Yeah, well, you know, they actually had an argument amongst themselves, and the leader of them was sitting there going, well, you know we're going to get in trouble, and I'm going to be the one blamed for this. But, you know, if you guys really want to do this, okay, let's go down and do it. But not only did they come down and you know, have a bunch of Earth girls and party, but they also taught mankind. They taught mankind about medicine. They taught mankind about agriculture. Seeing the parallels here, same as Prometheus. They taught things to mankind. And for that, they were punished. Again, another story of these gods wanting to keep us down. And other aliens or beings who take pity and they actually are trying to help us. So then you have, let's take a look at Moses, and you have the Ten Commandments. And I know we only got about 5 minutes left here, so
I'll I have a chat room question for you too. So,
okay, when Moses goes on the mountain, and of course he sees the burning bush, and there's all these parallels that the ancient alien theorists said, oh, a UFO came down, or whatnot. Let's put this besides the point. Let's take a look at this God that Moses is talking to. Again, he's really a jerk. He's demanding a lot. But one of the things he said, and this is in the first commandment. First commandment is, thou shalt not have any other gods before me, for I am a jealous God. Okay. That God, in those words, does not deny the existence of other gods. And Christianity and Judaism and Islam are all monotheistic religions who only believe there's one true God. But if you go back and look at it, the God of Moses doesn't deny there's other gods. Not at all. He doesn't say I'm the only God there is, so you know you can't worship them because they don't exist. That's not what he says. He says, I'm jealous. I want you to worship me and not them. And that is implying that there are other gods out there. And what are gods? Are gods these omnipresent beings who live in the spiritual realm up on high? Or are they other intelligent beings, either physical like us from an other world or from another dimension? And they're doing things down here, and they even argue with themselves. Again, Elohim has singular and plural connotations. So we may be dealing, in those early writings, people may be dealing with different gods each time. And it's only because we shoved it all into one book we're calling it one God. Okay, I think I blew your mind enough for right now.
So. Yeah, I'm spinning. Hey, we got a question from the chat room. I don't know if you saw it or not. It comes from Java Diva, wants to know what your thoughts on people with negative bloods being reptilians, such as the Queen of England, the royal family, many presidents. And she said RH negative blood. I wasn't sure if she meant A negative or A positive or
Well, the RH factor is they test babies. That's what the whole blood test thing is for when couples in the old days. And they don't worry about it so much these days because they have medications that can take care of it. But in the old days, remember when couples, before they got married, they'd have to go do the blood test?
Yep.
Well, that's what they were testing for, the RH factor. Because if you have a parent, one is RH positive and the other is RH negative, then that can allow a baby to be born with a conflict that causes them medical problems when they're first born, and now they can fix that with simple medication. But back then, it was something to really be, they had to worry about. If you get two parents that are RH positive, the baby's going to be fine. Same if they're RH negative. But if you get a plus and a minus together, then, of course, the baby being born is going to have an issue. But they can treat it with medications to overcome the effects after the baby is born. Now whether or not this is because of reptilian blood or whatever, that's a first I've heard of it, so I really don't have an answer for that. But if you look at the fact that many of the races, the human race, look at how we have the different skin color and pigmentation, the different – they call it races. Okay, we're all the human race. Give me a break. We're all one people, but we have different characteristics, and those genes have those different characteristics. Well, where do those different characteristics come from? Was the bloodline of humanity manipulated in the past? Did they experiment with different types of traits? And just like we breed horses now and breed other animals, who's to say that we were not genetically manipulated at some point to create people with different characteristics for whatever reason? You know, we're all essentially human, but even the different races have different aspects in their chromosome makeup and their physical characteristics. So it's, that might be a possibility.
It definitely gives us something to think about, that's for sure.
I could go on for hours.
I'm sure you could. But we are just about out of time, so unfortunately we can't go on for hours. But if people like Mark's ideas and theories and likes to hear those types of questions and maybe those types of guests talking about that subject, you can go to Unknown Origins Radio on the Dark Matters Radio Network and tell us about the show and when they can tune in.
Well, we're on every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. That's darkmatterradio.net. And, we broadcast live every week, as you do. And we try to get a nice, good mix of guests from talking about all sorts of subjects, everything covering the whole paranormal spectrum. So we try to keep it fun, informative, and we have a good time.
I've tuned in since the inception of the show, and I've really enjoyed it. I listened to the archives, as I said earlier. I don't have a lot of time to listen to the live shows, so I catch a lot of the shows on archived or podcast, and I recommend everybody check it out. I enjoy it, and Bruce is a great guest co-host, or I should say co-host, on the show. And you guys have a lot of great guests on, a lot of great topics, and it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Oh, no.
Of course, I listen to your show, too, and that's why I'm here, because I enjoy your show so much.
I appreciate that, too, as well. I know you and I were going to be together at an event coming up in June, Phenomenology 107. You'll be there, I assume?
Yes, I'll be there.
Excellent. Any other events you're going to be at you want to share with us real quick?
Not at this time. I've got kind of a real busy year coming up with family issues, family things coming up, and some trips. And plus, you know, with this TV show thing, we're also not sure. We may be doing some traveling overseas to talk about that soon. So right now I'm only scheduled to be at Phenomenology. But if anything else comes up, I'll certainly be announcing it.
Excellent. Well, I'll look forward to seeing you there, my friend. And thanks for joining us tonight. We really appreciate spending your hour and a half with us, or actually 2 hours, if you think about it, 2 hours, yep. And talking with LA tonight. Some great discussion there back and forth. And I'm glad you were here, because I sat there just kind of like dumbfounded. It's like, wow, this is over my head.
Yeah, and then I start talking, and then everybody's really dumbfounded.
That's why I stick to Bigfoot. It's simple.
Yeah, they're all coming out of their stupor about now. It's like, is this damn show over yet or not?
Yeah.
Get him off of there.
Well, it was fun nonetheless. LA, like as I said, LA is a great guest. We've had him on the show before, and he really knows his subject matter well, and really enjoyed talking with him tonight, as well as listening to you guys go back and forth and share some ideas and theories, bouncing them off of each other. A lot of fun, and that's what we like to do here, is just try to keep people's minds open and take a look at all possibilities and have a little fun while we do it.
Well, like I said, I'm going to have to get you over on my show here soon, and so we can talk about Bigfoot, because we haven't had a real good Bigfoot show in a while.
And don't worry, folks, I keep it simple, so I don't get too complex.
Oh, the KISS philosophy.
That's right.
Simple, stupid.
There you go. Next week on the show, folks, we've got another great guest that's going to be joining us. He hails from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, actually the South Hills of Pittsburgh. His name is Bob Cranmer. He is a former Allegheny County Commissioner, and he is going to be joining us to talk about an experience that he and his family lived through, and we'll find out if he still lives in the house. I can't recall if he still lives there or not, but he lived in a home on Brownsville Road in the South Hills of Pittsburgh, and the book is called The Demon of Brownsville Road, and it's a fascinating story. I've heard him on several other shows before, and he's going to be on next week to talk about it, so we'll look forward to having Bob on the show to share his story with us. That'll be next week. And our guest co-host next week is Marie Samuels. She'll be returning. She was with us on the Halloween special that we did back in October. A couple other things I want to throw out to everybody real quick. For those who tried to tune in to BTE Radio's Creature Features this past Monday night, we were going to do a test run of the show, but we had some problems getting the show on the air. So I'm going to work with the host over there at Live Paranormal, and we're going to get things working, and we should be back in February. We're going to try to get Sharon Day rescheduled for the program so she can come on and talk with Giants. My guest, or the co-host for that show, I should say, I keep saying guest co-host, but the co-host for that show is Karen Dolan, and I'll have a date announced pretty soon as to when we're going to be doing that. I also want to let everybody know, if you're a fan of Darkness Radio with Dave Schrader, Tim Dennis, and Mally Fox, darknessradio.com. I have returned to the program to host the Monster Watch segment every third Friday of the month on the Supernatural News. And I was back this past Friday night with Tim and Mally. Had a great time. Thanks to those guys for having me back. It's always fun talking with those guys. And if you want to hear the podcast of that show, you can go to their website, darknessradio.com, and listen to Friday night's show, Friday the 16th. The Supernatural News edition, and you can hear me ramble on for half an hour about things I don't know anything about. So it was a lot of fun. But we've come to the end of the program. Thank you again, Mark, for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it. Thanks to our guest, L.A. Marzulli. LAMarzulli.net is his website. And you have feedback for our show, questions, comments, you want to drop us a line, beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at BeyondTER. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/BeyondTheEdgeRadio. And you can reach us there. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. Appreciate everybody's support, and love seeing you guys in the chat room tonight. Great questions and comments. And until next week, everybody have a great Sunday night, and we'll catch you Sunday night next week, 8 p.m. start time, here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. Good night, everybody.
listening to Beyond the Edge Radio. Tune in live every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time here on the Para-X Radio Network and Planet Paranormal. You can find tonight's show along with all our archive shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic, Podbean, Blueberry, Parapods, Planet Paranormal, and the Para-X Radio Network. You can find all these links and more on our official website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. Music used on tonight's show was done so with permission of Midnight Syndicate. Visit their website at midnightsyndicate.com. Got feedback, questions, comments? We'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on BTE Radio. Beyond the Edge Radio is a Beyond the Edge Entertainment production heard here on Planet Paranormal and the Para-X Radio Networks.